I think it was an E60 or a 30 for 30 or one of those expose shows that was on, I caught on ESPN, I guess it was over the weekend, on the 9/11 stuff. And, you know, and with Piazza hitting the home run and the whole deal and President Bush throwing the pitch out and, you know, all things associated with that. And goodness gracious, to, you know, to think that I went back and you know, I had was getting flashbacks of things, you know, because we were with the Miami, we were with the Dolphins at the time, and we talk about this every year, but it's a big deal. Obviously, that would have been the second playing date. I had to look at our schedule to jog my memory. We had beaten Tennessee over there in the opening game, and we're scheduled to go to Buffalo that week, and then I remember, was it a Tuesday or whatever day of the week it was. Tuesday, yeah, and we're fixed to get started. We're going down to have an offensive meeting, and you know, I walked by, and Chan Gailey was a coordinator and heck of a guy, and I remember he had a TV in his office, and walked by there to say something to Chan. All of a sudden on the TV, you saw the smoke coming out of the first tower, and so, you know, we said, look, I said, Chan, look at that. So the plane's running into the tower or something. We turn around and look at it, here came the other one. And then, you know, bammo, and we go in there. And time we got out on the practice field, you know, had our meetings and everything. We got on the practice field. Somebody came out in the league office had, you know, had told everybody that all games had been canceled and, you know, this sort of thing. And everybody was just kind of in shock about everything, like the, you know, like everybody else was with this thing going on. And then the next week, the next playing date was September the 23rd. And you know, we play Oakland in Miami, and again, I jog my memory, gosh, it just gives me chills to the cover of Sports Illustrated that week. We score, our quarterback Jay Fiedler scrambles in the last play of the game, and we beat Oakland. It's a picture on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Pull it up if you don't get cold chills. Pull it up, and Jay's on the ground as he crosses the goal line, and he's got one fist raised up in the air, and the title of it is Coming Back. You know, with the sporting events starting up and America, you know, and all this stuff. Again, it just gives me chills looking at it. And then we go up there. I'd forgotten how long it was. October the 14th, you know, we go up there to play the Jets. And I can remember, you know, the plane as we're going around the city to get to LaGuardia. And pilot says, if you will look out the left side of the airplane, you know, you could see downtown Manhattan, and it was there, and you could still see smoke coming out of both holes in the ground, you know, and that was, whoa, you know, I mean, you just got you. And then we go to play them at Meadowlands, and that's always been, you've heard me say, it's been one of my favorite stadiums forever. It's not there anymore, but it's a great stadium. But when you pull in the visitors, you know, you pull in behind the chain link fence, and it was kind of, then you had to walk down a little bit to go into the tunnel. And you know, right, and there was a, you know, walkway right above it, and as we pull into the stadium, I mean, you can see, you know, the military presence there. And then when we got out of our buses, I remember this vividly, going down in security. I mean, it was way beyond guys with yellow jackets and security on the back of them. You know what I mean? What you usually see.
Yeah, these were real live badasses.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, I can remember getting off the bus and looking right above me as we start walking down the ramp, and it's camo and AR-15s. And, you know, I mean, it's it wasn't like they were waving or anything to the, you know, anybody coming in or anything had to do with football. I mean, they were watching intently what was going on, because you had that chain link fence around the stadium, but they were watching very intently what was going on. I mean, it was an armed camp. I mean, it was really, really eerie, and we won the game and got on out of there. But, you know, that whole scenario, gosh, I was listening to, again, to Greenberg, and just reliving all that stuff. But I'm sure his feature will does it focus around the baseball aspect of
it?
Is that what it was?
Yes, it does.
How baseball, you know, helped heal the nation in the weeks following and so forth, and so no, and also they you know, talked to a number of families and children who were impacted by the attacks,
right,
and where they are today. And then, like we said, they got commentary from especially the New York baseball community, like Mike Piazza, Bernie Williams, John Franco, Al Leiter, the managers, Joe Torre, and Bobby Valentine. So I'm sure it'll be a great production.
I'm sure.
And again, it's coming up on HBO Max on premieres on Saturday the 11th.
Well, that E60 thing I saw had a lot of Torian Valentine and some of those same guys and the whole deal, you know, and it was, again, very, very powerful.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next question, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Did you get anything, Matt? Did you pay? I know you follow this. So, did y'all pay much attention to the Baseball Hall of Fame stuff
yesterday? You bet. Yeah, I definitely did.
Did you watch the induction? Or
I saw Jeter's speech. I didn't watch. Yeah. I haven't seen the other ones all the way through. Look, Derek Jeter, it's amazing the guys, as polarizing it is, it must be because of the NY on his hat, because how anybody could think this guy is overrated?
One guy that didn't vote for him, he's one vote away from, oh, Lord, yeah.
Well, I mean, the only person.
Thank you to all the baseball writers.
Except one.
I heard that, and then I read about it, and I mean, I'm sure he did a good to have a big. The crowd wasn't as big because it was Wednesday and because of the COVID stuff, right, man?
That's probably right. Although, you know, the vast majority of the fans were there were Yankee fans,
yeah, right,
for obvious reasons.
Right.
It was. I thought it was really well done. You guys know how I feel about the Hall of Fame stuff. I can't get enough of it.
Right.
You know, I wish that they wouldn't put any time constraints on anybody, but that's beside the point. No, Jeter was—he's fantastic. I mean,
did they have as many, Matt? Excuse me, of the former players that up there as they usually do?
Not as many. As a matter of fact,
31.
Yeah, 31 of
Hall of Famers
right.
made it to Cooperstown.
And I guess I read where the members of the Baseball Hall of Fame, it's now what, in the 300s?
333.
Yeah, 333. Now stop and think about that. Major League Baseball, and I know you get into, you know, before the modern era, before 1900, but Major League Baseball has been going on since, you know, the 1870s.
Oh, yeah.
To think there are only 333 people that are in the Baseball Hall of Fame, you want to talk about an exclusive club. And again, that's why I get such a big kick out of this is, you know, all these Hall of Fames, just because think about all the football players, all the baseball, whatever sport, you know, and how hard it is to get into that thing. Marvin Miller, very deserving. I thought it was kind of funny. Donald Fear, who succeeded Marvin Miller as the player rep.
Right.
I thought it was funny. The one article I read, you know, he was kind of going on, and the fans were starting to get restless because they were waiting for Jeter to get up there. But Marvin Miller, the impact that he had on the game cannot be minimized. Larry Walker was an excellent player. You almost feel bad for some of these guys that have to go in, you know, like, you know, as kind of a supporting actor to Jeter. But no, Larry Walker was a fantastic player, and Ted Simmons, longtime Cardinal,
first Rockies player to go into the Hall.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
See, he's. I'm not. You know, I haven't kept up with it, quite honestly.
Yeah, he's more recent, Pat.
In that kind of deal, and I look what he's got. What 313 lifetime or 320 or something like that. Which
fantastic,
you know,
hitter.
And now 260.
Really a fantastic all around player.
Right.
To be honest.
Right.
With you.
Simmons, obviously, I remember.
Absolutely.
He's my age when he broke in with the Cardinals at 18. Craig, you remember that?
Yeah. Oh, Ted Simmons. Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. You know, and the whole deal, and then like say Marvin Miller and everything. Jeter. Yeah, so at what point in his acceptance did he kind of get, was it early on when he was poking fun at the voter, Matt? You remember
when was it?
That he did it?
I'm trying to remember when it was that he said that.
I would think it'd be early on because
thanking all the fans, right, Matt?
I mean, think so. Yeah, he was going through his thank yous.
To the writers, all but one of them.
But he talked about how, you know, it's a storybook deal. He grew up wanting to be the shortstop for the New York Yankees. I mean, that's what he said.
Okay.
He talked about the advice that his dad would give him. Like, his dad would often, you know, give him advice even when he became a pro and became an established all-star or whatever. It, you know, the thing about Jeter that I said this yesterday with Craig and Mark, Pat, is that those single-digit numbers for the Yankees, I don't think there's any of them left now. They've all been retired.
Right,
Ruth,
right.
Garrick, DiMaggio, go down the list. Bobby Mercer, go down the list. Well, I don't know if it was the last one, but it was one of the last ones was number two. And Buck Showalter was the manager of the Yankees, and then he gave way to Joe Torre, And I'm pretty sure Joe Torre was the manager Jeter's rookie year in 96, I believe. But I think it was Showalter, the story I remember. It was somebody in the Yankees organization that as Derek Jeter was working his way to the major leagues, when they knew he was going to make the ball club, I think it was Showalter who said, hey, you can give him a single-digit number. Meaning that this guy is going to be in that club.
He's the next
club.
One. Yeah, yes. Right.
And I mean, that's pretty powerful stuff. When you think about, you know, all the numbers they've retired, the titans of that game, of that sport, and to think that, you know, even before he had gotten into the major leagues, there were people in that organization that knew how special he was going to be.
Sure.
You know, class act, you know, terrific defensive player, you know, lifetime, 310 hitter, 14-time All-Star, 5-time Gold Glover. And don't get me started on these Major League Baseball writers. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, there's been one person that's been a unanimous Hall of Famer, unanimously voted on the first ballot. It was Mariano Rivera, and very well deserved. But how in the world who would not vote Hank Aaron, Babe Ruth, Willie Mays, you know, these types in?
Sure.
Don't get me started on the snootiness of some of these writers. But I thought that was a pretty good barb. And I'm sure that kind of, you know, Pat, I mean, you've been around a lot of great athletes. I'm sure little things like that, where it may not seem that big of a deal to somebody like me, Joe Fan on the couch, I'm sure slights like that still kind of gnaw at guys a little bit.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you talked yesterday about Coach Majors. He was still upset about not winning the Heisman Trophy.
Right.
You know.
Right. Yeah. If you give him proof serum, you get down to it. Oh yeah.
So when he said that yesterday, everybody got a laugh at it. But I'll bet you there's a small part of his soul that's still a little perturbed about it. I'm serious. I bet you it bothers him a little bit.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.